Blog Talk Radio.
I was toting my pack along the dusty Winnemucca road, when along came a semi with a high canvas covered boat. If you're going to Winnemucca, Mac, you can ride. And so I climbed into the cab and then I settled down inside. He asked me if I'd seen a road with so much dust and sand, and I said, listen, I've traveled every road in this here land. I've been everywhere, man. Cross the desert, bear, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel, I've had my share, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Reno, Chicago, Fargo, Minnesota, Buffalo, Toronto, Winslow, Sarasota, Wichita, Delta, Ottawa, Oklahoma, Tampa, Panama, Madama, La Paloma, Finger Falls, and North Salvador, Amarillo, Tocopilla, Philip, Angola, and Fidel, I'm a killer. I've been everywhere, man. I've been everywhere, man. Cross the desert, bear, man. I breathe the mountain air, man. Travel out of head, my chair, man. I've been everywhere. I've been to Boston, Charleston, Dayton, Louisiana, Washington, Houston, Kingston, Sacramento, Monterey, Fairbanks, Santa Fe, Dallas, Bedrock, Black Rock, Rock, Tennessee.
It's time for the next edition of the Riveting Jumbo Justice Radio Show, broadcast worldwide on Blog Talk Radio. Turn up your speakers and listen closely, since you may be asked questions later. Keep your phone handy, since we encourage you to call in your comments to the host and guests on today's show. The listener call-in number is 347-996-5983. Once again, the number is 347-996-5983. You will also find the number on the top of the homepage for the Jumbo Justice Radio Show. I'm Audrey, your technical and spiritual advisor for the radio broadcast. And now, without further delay, allow me to introduce your eminently qualified and inspiring host for Jumbo Justice, Professor Keith Haley.
Thank you very much, Audrey. Again, welcome to Blog Talk Radio and the Jumbo Justice Radio Show. I'm your host, Keith Haley. This week, we employed Johnny Cash to do I've Been Everywhere, Man. We still haven't found Hank Snow since he disappeared. In any way, we'll try to find him. Emily, welcome to the show again tonight. We appreciate your assistance. We tried some things different again this week to try to bring you the best sound quality with the music, but the play buttons did not appear on our sheet on the internet, so we'll have to work on that. We'll see what happens. I talked with folks this week and thought we had that straightened out, but apparently we don't. I'm going to look one more time just to be sure that they didn't show up, and they didn't. They're supposed to be on my upload file page, and they're not there. Anyway, happy holidays. Merry Christmas. Happy New Year. Please be careful out there this weekend. You know what happens on New Year's Eve. A lot of folks are out there driving. Unfortunately, a lot of our protection agents in terms of police officers and highway patrol officers and state troopers, township officers and all the other categories, we'll be out there assisting and making our roads safe. And I hope you've not been a victim of the holiday crime spree, as we usually have one. I was visiting in Springfield, Ohio here a couple of days ago, and we did have some folks who happened to stay in the Holiday Inn got in the middle of a shootout that they had there. So those kind of things do go on. people were having a fight over some probably inconsequential thing. I did want to mention tonight, before we get started on the meat of the show, I did post a couple of new articles on Conservative Justice Digest, and you can find that at www.conservativejusticedigest.blogspot.com. Conservativejusticedigest.blogspot.com. And put the article up there that's going to appear in the book Strange But Real, Perspectives on Odd Issues in Criminal Justice. And this is the one that's on prison nurseries. It hadn't been there before. I put that up. And then the article that I'm going to be talking about tonight that is based on the study of seven different gun shows that I conducted with the author Tammy Campbell and with the assistance of Dr. Nicholas Valsic. That's a study of six gun shows and one gun show in Texas and one in Oklahoma City. And I think you'll enjoy the study. I can't go over all the details tonight, but if you've never been to a gun show, it is a large gun show. It is certainly an event to behold, and I think some of the details of that study will at least make you curious if you work in and around the criminal justice field. So you might stop by one of those gun shows. The purpose of our show always is to discuss some news and events and special issues and developments in the field of criminal justice. And most of the time, they're serious matters. Sometimes there is a little humor injected in these stories. And I think you need humor to comprehend and to sustain yourself in the field of criminal justice. And this show is dedicated to those tireless police and court, corrections, and juvenile justice professionals who keep us safe not only in the United States but throughout the world. And I think that deployment worldwide is getting more and more common as we go along. You're listening to this on Blog Talk Radio. It is a leading-edge technology. Alan Levy is the man in charge of all this. He's the CEO of Blog Talk Radio. I've actually had the pleasure of speaking with him once. And I heard this morning on another show on Blog Talk Radio that they now have over 1,000 hosts of shows. I think some have more than one show, which is interesting. But what is possible if you're a listener or a new listener? Your organization, your interest group, or you personally, whatever you're interested in, whether it be repairing automobiles to pole vaulting, you, in fact, could have your own radio show. You could broadcast as many as 17 hours per week on Blog Talk Radio. It will stream live on the Internet, and it will go all over the world, and you can have an unlimited number of listeners, and it's all free. That's an incredible thing. I would think that some schools would actually begin to think about this tying Blog Talk Radio in with some of their courses or actually doing a course that way. The shows are archived, and they're immediately available for replay. Well, not immediately. It takes about 5 or 6 minutes. And you can go and either download those into an MP3, you can replay them, or can download them onto a CD or the hard drive of your computer. And if you look through the program guide for Blog Talk Radio, you'll find shows on everything imaginable. You'll find lots of shows in the entertainment category. Politics, I think, is the second largest category under which we've placed our show, although it might not be purely that. And there are many others. Business certainly is one, and a lot of people on there selling products. I did notice a gentleman this morning. I didn't listen to more than two or three, but it looks like he's running a one-hour, or I don't know how long it is, advertisement over some product he's selling at least once a day. So he has a show every day, and it's probably just a recording of what he's doing. I guess that's okay according to the rules of Blog Talk Radio. Well, what we're going to do tonight is look in part two of our shows on firearms in America and the debate over firearms. And last week we spent time on the right to carry law, and we had an interesting discussion at least comparing two states, Texas and Ohio. Those are both states that, based on research projects I was involved in, I actually went through the licensing procedure and got a right to carry license in both states. Tonight we're going to focus on gun shows. And again, if you have not done this, actually attended a large gun show, I don't think you can even imagine what you're going to see. Sure, there are going to be guns there, but the event and the tumult and the excitement of these particular displays and gathering of people will be something that will astound you, at least the first time. I want to reiterate the presence of some finely written articles that are on the conservativejusticedigest.com. One of the ones I put up last week, which I think I mentioned also, was a discussion of female sexual predators and what we ought to do about them. And, of course, the point there is that they get light, if no punitive treatment in our criminal justice system. So that's an interesting article written by Sherry Warnock, who's been a police officer for 13 years. Well, here's what you do as a listener or a caller. You can listen on your computer with a Windows Media Player. You can call in by phone, by cell, by landline. You can use the wonderful Skype service. I just signed up for my 1 year of Skype service. It costs $14.95 now for unlimited calls from your computer to any landline or cell phone in the United States or Canada for 1 year. So I don't mind doing a little advertisement for them. Of course, if you have a cell phone and you have minutes and a calling plan or a number of calling plans, you can call that way. But Skype is something you just sit in front of your computer and you hit the dial pad and you can call anybody in the United States or Canada. On our show tonight, we can hold five calls at a time if we have that many call in at the same time, and we have had that many. And when I click on your little microphone under your phone number, what that does is it puts you on the show. You can both hear the show and talk to me as the host and any of the other callers that have been activated through that little click on their microphone. So that means we can have a conversation of at least six people at the same time, which is a great technology. We're going to take a little look tonight at some stories in the news. And I'm going to start off with one here. I don't think we're going to be able to hear Emily and Audrey again. They found another article about surveillance camera policy. We'll try and see if we can get that on, but I'm not sure you're going to be able to hear that. I would appreciate it if someone who's listening would call in and let me know how this this sound is working. We're trying a couple different things tonight, and I think we're going to go back to the old system if we can't get these playback buttons to appear on my computer screen, and they're not there. The last word I got was that as soon as my show goes on the air at 9 p.m., those playback buttons would be there. They are not there tonight. This was a great story I found on Ananova.com today. I don't know if you ever look at Ananova, but Ananova, she was the first virtual news broadcaster on the Internet, and she's been out of service for about a year, but she had a great voice and personality, and she was a virtual newscaster. She never missed a day of work, and she would give you video reports on the news in a number of categories, both short version and long. And I think what they're doing now is reprogramming her. I can't imagine what was wrong. She worked perfectly before, but they still have a wonderful news site. And this comes out of the United Kingdom. This is a story about what I would call criminal justice, if you get my drift. It's a story about three thugs or muggers who mugged a pensioner after he went and picked up his pension check. Well, the only mistake they made was that this guy happened to be, he's 67 years old. His name is George Bayliss, but he's from Bury St. Edmunds in the United Kingdom. And what happened is that he is the, for 3 years, he was the middleweight boxing champion of the British Army. So they made a little mistake after they approached him and started to rob him. He hit him with a left hook. You got to be careful. You don't know much about boxing. That left hook comes around and you don't see it. He's a retired builder who boxed for England in the 1960s, and he hit the ringleader of this group with a left hook to the chin, and then his pals took off along with him empty-handed. He says, the guy I hit got what he deserved. My only regret is I didn't hit him harder. I hope they think twice before picking on someone my age again. So that's a real good story, and I imagine there's a little deterrent effect built into the result of that particular event. This is another story off of Ananova.com. It's, you know, police officers sometimes, I can recall this, catch people speeding, usually for all the wrong reasons, but sometimes they're involved in an emergency. And I've had this several times where a woman's being rushed to the hospital because she's going to deliver a baby very soon. Of course, the procedure, at least it was in my day, was you stop the car, put the woman and the passenger in your car, and then take them to the hospital in the cruiser, which is a lot safer with a red light on in siren. But anyway, what this couple in Germany, they got caught speeding, Barbara and John Meyer, or Johann Meyer, and they were given a speeded ticket after they were photographed by one of those infamous speeding cameras. But finally, they told the authorities that they were on their way to the hospital where Barbara gave birth to her first baby. The police canceled the fine. Wasn't that nice of them? Then instead of sending them a fine or a collection for a fine, they sent them a toy police officer in uniform holding a speed camera. I don't know if that's a joke on the part of the German police or what, but I thought that was sort of a hoot. This is a story out of the New York Times here today, and it's, you know, we've got some results from crime here last year, and I'll read you the lead into the story. It says that gangs and drugs and easy access to guns and a disturbing tendency among young people to pull guns to demand respect were among the causes authorities cited in trying to explain this year's increase in murders in New York and many other major cities after years of decline. And if you probably recall, in the 1991 or 1992, New York City was experiencing more than 2,000 murders a year. And then last year through December 24, they reported 579 homicides, and that's a nearly 10% increase from the year before. The spike mostly reflected an unusually large number of reclassified homicides, of those involving victims who were shot or stabbed years ago but did not die until this year. That's interesting. I guess we can always determine the cause of death, no matter how long the death takes to transpire. But 35 such deaths have been added to this year's toll, which makes New York look particularly bad, but still, they're under 600 homicides a year. So that's not bad. Last year's homicides were 539. This year it's 579. And a police spokesman for the New York City Police Department, he says that he blamed the rise in part on the availability of guns. And every time I see that, I have trouble understanding that. Guns are available, I guess, about everywhere in America. Who knows what the census on guns is now? It's probably 260 million, 265 million plus. But I don't think any one of them come with an automatic firing mechanism. It takes people to pull the trigger, and they have to point them at someone. And when they do that, someone ends up wounded or dead. But anyway, that's what he said. He blamed it on the availability of guns, particularly weapons from out of state. I'm sure they wouldn't be New York State or New York City guns. The city this year sued dozens of out-of-state gun shops that it says are responsible for many of the illegal weapons on the city streets. I don't doubt that, but I also know that they're, what would it take you, 15 minutes if you knew anything about New York City to purchase an illegal gun, and it may in fact come from one of these dealers, or it may in fact never come across any type of record-keeping process in that city. In Chicago, homicides through the first 11 months of the year were up 3.3% compared with the same period in 2005. And I guess you saw overall that crime went down. Violent crime went up 2 or 3%. Violent crime, nonviolent crime in the Part 1 crimes went down about 4%. So overall, crime is actually down, although in homicides in some of these cities is actually up. The Houston police, they attribute a 15% increase in the homicide count in that city to the influx of Katrina evacuees from the Gulf Coast. And Lieutenant Murray Smith says, we expect this to settle. We're hoping that it will go down over time. Cities such as Cincinnati, which has had 83 homicides so far, that's up from 79 in 2005, posted their highest numbers ever. Others saw their highest death tolls in years. So I could go on and look at some of these other cities they go through, some of the major ones. But in Los Angeles, it's interesting, homicides are actually down. And I read another article that Chief Bratton was mentioning that he doesn't know how he could be lucky in so many places, but of course he was gets a lot of the credit and should for reducing the crime rates in both Boston and New York City transit system and the New York City Police Department later on. So he's looking for his second five-year term as chief of police in Los Angeles, and I would think if there's ever a city that's a challenge as a police chief, that would certainly be one. I thought it would be interesting to let you know that right next to the this story about murders in New York City was a New York City police recruiting advertisement, and it was a very classy advertisement. I don't know if you've seen it on the internet, but anyway, when you click on it, one of the lines there said that New York experiencing its lowest crime rate in years, although it was right next to the article that talked about murders going up. But when you clicked on the link, it took you to another page, the recruiting page, which was very well done, and it had pictures of New York officers that you could click on and get testimonials from them, and it was very flashy in terms of its technique. Just to be sure here that everything's working, I'm going to click on somebody that's called in, if you don't mind here, and we'll see if they can hear us. Hello, anyone there?
Hey, Keith, do you think handsome advertisement actually recruits police officers?
Who is this? Who's calling? Where are you calling from?
I refuse to tell you on grounds that would incriminate me.
Okay, that's good enough. I can understand that. I don't understand how the warden let you call. But you did it. I don't know if they do on websites. It seems that we keep being told that these young people spend more and more of their time on the web. So maybe they do work, but, boy, everybody's recruiting, aren't they?
Yes, they are. They can't get people to apply.
We're going to do a show on recruiting in January. That's going to be one of my favorites because I'm very interested in that, and as you know, particularly the physical fitness part of that in terms of qualifications. So it's going to be interesting to see see what happens in that regard. Are you hearing this pretty well?
I hear you great.
Okay, I'm using a speaker phone, but I am so disappointed that those play buttons didn't come up because I've got five or six sound files that I've uploaded, and they're supposed to work perfectly just like you're hearing my voice, but I couldn't use them because there are no play buttons on my screen. So I don't know where these things are. This is the second week in a row, but that would have made the songs and you know, the audio passages that Audrey and Emily do would have made them work out perfectly. But it just didn't happen. So I don't know what the story is. Jack, what's your view about surveillance cameras? I got two or three stories about that, and I had Audrey and Emily that we're going to do a portion on that, but I can't use them tonight. I'll have to save that. What do you think about these things? Do you like them?
I think they have a place. I don't know if you have to, you know, do it all over a city or something like that. I think it's like everything else. You know, you have a crime increase. I would like to dovetail those into the crime analysis studies that are being done, which shows you a grouping of crimes and like those areas. I know Cincinnati is, I think, eliminating the ones that have the far shot where the cameras zoom in on the shot. They're finding other things. They're sensitive to other things, and they're really causing some problems. Plus, the whole idea was that they would have civilians, you know, monitor these cameras.
Right.
I think they're having trouble getting civilians.
They want to sit down and do that, right?
Correct.
And I think the deal in Cincinnati was that they had to come either to a police district station or to the citywatch.org. Was CityWatch, wasn't that the name of that company? Something like that, I think. But
yeah.
You couldn't do this from your home, of course.
Of course not.
Yeah.
They have a beautiful center now up on is it Rensselaer? Not Rensselaer. It's up on the top of the knob in Price Hill. And they have, I know they're looking for people for a number of things. They got, needless to say, a lot of money from Homeland Security, and so they're increasing their power there.
Yes.
Actually, they're actually hiring people from Kentucky for this.
Is that right? Huh. Well, you have time to listen to something here from Beijing, which I thought was interesting, about surveillance cameras.
Haley, I'll get all the time in the world for you.
And people are just now starting to, you know, participate in, or at least get active in trying to understand the surveillance camera business. And I've been tracking this for a couple years, and I got about a 2-foot stack of news articles and a lot of things saved from the internet. But would you believe that Beijing, a communist dictatorial nation, right?
Right.
They are actually coming up with laws to govern how these cameras can be used in order not to invade people's privacy. It says here a plan by the Beijing city government to have thousands more video cameras installed in hotels, department stores, schools, nightclubs, and government has caused some privacy concerns. The city government defends the move, saying it will introduce the first regulations to ever require businesses and institutions to keep the video images confidential. Isn't that something? How many cameras would you think, take a guess, that Beijing already has?
I would have no idea, Keith.
Big population, right? Big city.
Yeah.
They already have 263,000. And they plan to install only 15,000 of those, or 5.7%, are the cities that are actually installed by the government. But they're going to have these regulations. The city's new regulations will require businesses and institutions to aim their cameras only within the boundaries of their property or their workplace. Private citizens will be prohibited from setting up their own surveillance cameras near roads and squares and other public places, according to the city. Isn't that something?
Yeah.
And we're talking about the communist government is allowing the people to participate in the writing of some of these rules. It's interesting here. It said Beijing's new regulations appear to be aimed at allaying public concerns over who has access to the images obtained by surveillance cameras. A survey jointly conducted by the China Youth Daily and Sina.com shows that 34% of the respondents in the population worry that they're being spied upon by these cameras. With all due respect to the maybe the naivete of the author, but this isn't People's Dailies Online. I imagine the communist government would have no problem spying on you, but at least publicly, they're saying they're not going to do that. And here are several cases that actually brought this. In one case, a video camera in a hotel corridor caught a famous Chinese actress in an intimate embrace with her boyfriend. The security guard sold the footage to a Hong Kong newspaper. Then in another case, a high school principal in Shanghai staged a public showing of a videotape of two students kissing in a classroom with the apparent aim of humiliating them. I'm glad to see that the United States doesn't have a monopoly on crazy public school administrators, right?
I'll probably
The teenage couple was so incensed they launched a privacy lawsuit. They didn't win it, but at least they did it. But anyway, it's interesting. And then if you go over here on the second page of this article, it talks about Shanghai. Shanghai plans to install an additional 200,000 surveillance cameras by 2010. Then Shenzhen, a thriving city in South China's Guangdong province, says by the end of this year it will have installed 200,000 cameras. My Lord, can you imagine the labor involved in doing that? But I guess finding labor in China is probably no problem, right?
Right.
I mean, that is just unbelievable. Okay, let me give you one more on this thing, and then we'll cut out on the surveillance business and get the gun shows. This comes out of Chicago, which is another city that's infatuated with these cameras, and Mayor Daley up there says he thinks this is the future. I mean, that's a direct quote from what he said or been quoted in other articles. Patrons of a Northwest Side massage parlor may have had their visits with prostitutes broadcast over the internet, police say. Based on statements from a woman who worked there and the sophistication of computer equipment seized from the VIP salon and day spa, I love those names, police believe sex acts might have been transmitted from small curtain cubicles onto the internet, says Police Commander Ralph Price. Officers found the tiny cameras mounted in the ceilings, and then they traced the wires, and the wires went to computers. And one of the women that worked there said the real money was not from the sex trade there at the parlor, but it was from the money they made selling those pictures to, you know, live sites on the internet. So not only did you pay for your service, but you also got broadcast around the internet. Actually, the police have been trying to close this place down for 5 or 6 months, but what happens is they can only charge them with misdemeanors, and they think they actually have them on this. It involves some felony type crimes. Okay, what I think we're going to do, Jack, if you've got time to listen in, I know some others are supposed to give me a call. We're going to look at this business about gun shows, and I mentioned in the opening, if a person hasn't been to a gun show, how many of these have you been to, Jack?
One. I went to one at the gardens years ago.
Was it a big one?
It filled the whole floor of the gardens.
Okay, right. That's how these things usually work. I think it's incredible the size of some of these. And let me mention some of the what happened here in our study in Texas. This is in the book With Liberty and Guns for All, if you want to see that. And I also say, I think we got it in Crime and Punishment in the Lone Star State. That's a McGraw-Hill book. But anyway, what I got interested in, and Audrey was going to read you the objectives of our study and the methodology, how we carried it out and the place we looked at, but she won't be able to do that tonight due to our audio problems. But what I actually did is we went and looked at six gun shows in Dallas or the Dallas area. It was actually the city of Dallas or Dallas County or the city of Mesquite. I went to two of them at the Big Town Exhibition Hall in Mesquite, Texas. And this was from September 26, 1993 to January 8, 1994. And one of those was in Oklahoma City on the state fairgrounds. Now, some states actually have laws that you can't use public grounds to host a gun show. I think one of those was actually California. You know, my background, I sort of grew up around guns. I came from a hunting and shooting type family, and I may have mentioned before when I was about 13 or 14, I got sort of tired of it and wanted to play basketball and run track and things like that. My father understood that, so I sort of got away from it. And I'd only owned like one firearm from the time I got out of police work until I did this gun show. In fact, all the time I was at the Peace Officer Training Commission that had indoor and outdoor ranges, I never once fired a weapon. But in getting ready for this thing, I began to research the law on gun shows. And at this time, the gun show was really kind of a loophole because you had this thing about the check and the waiting period and all that, and this was going to delay people who were going through mental problems or whatever, who had criminal checks or background from getting a firearm, when in fact the gun show was a loophole because you could go to gun shows and they were exempt from that. And gun shows have a number of people that sell firearms, as you probably realize, folks in the audience. You can be a dealer. You can be a collector. I'll go through some of these methods here, or these categories of sellers and attendees in a moment. But the gun show allows you to walk in. For example, we did that as part of our methodology. I bought and sold guns. I bought them with the intention that I was going to sell them back at later gun shows. I just wanted to know and experience how that works. So I bought an SKS rifle. I bought an Orenco 45 caliber pistol, and then sold them. And of course, one of the things that you can do, you can, for $40, you can buy a table and sit down and sell right next to the guy that's got 300 guns lying on the table, who's a licensed dealer. You as a private citizen can sit there and sell guns to anyone, or you don't even have to do that. All I did was put a little sign on my rifle as I walked around the gun show, and a guy comes up and says, that's something I've been looking for. apparently they use this SKS rifle, Chinese rifle, to hunt deer, which is a pretty heavy rifle, but they actually do that. And then when I resold this 45 caliber Norinco pistol, which you've probably seen those, the guy never even took it out of the box, I swear to God. I walked in the Richardson Gun Show, the box said Norinco 45 caliber, and I had a sign on it. He gave me the money back. I think I made like $10 or $15 on my sale, and he never opened the box. That's how common that was. But before the gun show, before I started studying these, I noticed that the ATF, if you can believe this, was just now starting to discover that gun shows were a big source of firearms in America. Can you imagine that? This is the organization in the 1990s that kept their records in shoeboxes on racks. Did you realize that?
No.
They were card files. They weren't computerized records in the 1990s. They actually kept them on racks in the 1990s. And, of course, well, you know the trouble the FBI is having with getting a case management system for their for the FBI, right? They're now going to probably junk their second multi-million dollar, and I mean multi-million dollar computer system. And I often thought of you, Jack. You could help them set up a case management system, right?
A what? Case management?
Management system. You had the first one in the nation in the probation department, didn't you?
The FBI?
Yeah.
I don't think I could help them at all. They're too good.
Okay.
That's a little tongue-in-cheek there.
Right. One of the things that you'll find out when you go to one of these gun shows in terms of structure and layout, this is commerce at the highest order. I mean, it is really something. And the first one I went to was in the fall in 1993. It was at the Dallas Convention Center, which is a great big convention center. And at the same time, the International Beauty Show was going on. And it was a show for fashion and cosmetics and that type of thing. And when you literally walked up the steps and turned right or left, depending on which show you were going to, it certainly made an interesting mix of clientele, if you know what I mean.
Right.
There were the guys in the hunting clothes, not all of them, of course, dressed like that, but the women who were dressed just fit to kill and makeup and hairstyles and all that. And I think some of those guys wanted to turn right instead of left to the gun show. but they didn't. But admission to the arena was $5 for this show, and it had 700 seller's tables. And we had a methodology. I had four or five people actually assist me in most of these shows that we studied. But for $4, you could see 700 different tables of sellers and that kind of thing. And all of them had rules for example, displays. You were only supposed to display, and this is according to a brochure that you're given, anything that firearms and firearms-related equipment. In actuality, that wasn't the case. When you actually got in there, you could buy Nazi flags, you could buy almost any military weapons, uniforms, actually vehicles. Can you believe that? They were selling Jeeps. Did they have those at the convention center in Cincinnati?
Yes, sir.
That type of thing. But these vendors were very interesting people. Many of them were very professional. And we actually went through in two of these gun shows at Dallas Convention Center and took several of us, and we tried to count how many guns were there, at least make an estimate. And we estimated that at the Dallas Convention Center, in fact, one of the managers said the same thing, there were 100,000 guns on display. Can you believe that? 100,000, and underneath the tables, of course, were more locked chests of guns. As they sold guns, they get them out of the chest and put them up on the table. So that was just unbelievable. Rifles, shotguns, pistols of every variety imaginable. And you'd have to look at the shooter's Bible to get an idea of how many different kinds of guns there are. Did you ever do that?
I never, I was there because it was a detail that I worked.
Oh, yeah. Oh, you were working security for it, huh?
Yes, sir.
Okay, I see. But there were different kinds of dealers, and one I would call, the dealer I would call the conventionals. These were people that operated real gun shops, in the Texas or Oklahoma, Louisiana area. So they were licensed by the federal government to sell firearms, and they had all the hot models and the best makes and that type of thing. Then there's a second category that I call the specialists, or we call the specialists, and they were people that had very restricted things that they sold in terms of interest. It was like they only sold hunting rifles, or they only sold rifles for shooting varmints, that type of thing. I didn't even know there was a varmint shooting association, and there actually is. One of my friends belonged to it in Springfield. I didn't know that. But these specialists, they were much smaller in terms of the number of weapons they had, but they were very busy because people would come into the gun show and go right to them. I might also point out that we had to be very careful about taking notes because the rules of the gun show were, and some others have told us, if you look like you're in there and you're sort of anti-gun show and, you know, it looks like you're trying to embarrass people and that type of thing, that they'll actually ask you to leave, that they'd done that before. So we were sort of, we were unobtrusive about taking notes, and then when we left, we all sat down and wrote up our notes as best as we can in more detailed kind of form. Then another category of seller we called...
you carry that recorder all the time.
Yeah, right. but another category we had was what we called the collectors, and they were people that sold antique weapons of one type or another. They were black powder weapons or Old West guns or guns that only women had carried or would carry, that type of thing. So that was interesting. And then we have what we call the citizens, and this is people like any of us. We could go get pay our $40 and sit down on a table and lay up six or eight weapons or 10 or whatever we had. And there were some people there that were kind of like the flea market types. Mm-hmm. They would go out and buy guns from a show, you know, at a lower rate a week or two before. Then they'd show up at this gun show and lay them all out on the table, not very nicely displayed or anything like that. Usually no security things. I might also point out in Dallas, all these weapons of these dealers all had a little security wire going through them so that people couldn't, because there were literally 200 and 300 on two or three tables for one of these dealers. So somebody could snatch one. And 150,000 people would go a weekend to this at Dallas Convention Center. Isn't that incredible?
Jeepers.
Sold like 150,000 tickets. I don't know how many we get for the Dallas Cowboys, but it's not, it's not that many. So that's kind of interesting. Then, so these citizens could also be the walk-around types who just merely put the gun on their back or carried a box around with a sign on it that they had a particular type of weapon there. So that was interesting to see them. Then this last category is what we call wheeler dealers. And these were people that sold anything that was really hot. They weren't interested in much conversation. They just wanted you to step up, and they had stacks of, you know, like Chinese Norinco weapons or something like that. And, you know, buy it, take it or leave it was kind of their approach. In fact, a couple of them were actually very rude to us when we asked questions. They weren't interested in questions and answers. They were interested in sales totally. So they sold a lot of fad weapons, that type of thing. And some of them weren't against making money on, like, Saturday Night Specials. One of the dealers that we saw in Dallas, he actually had a grab box, if you can believe that. He had a great big pasteboard box that was sort of painted up. And inside was probably, in fact, we reached inside, and there were probably 25 guns in there, little pistols. And they were $25, and you could take your pick. I thought that was funny, a grab bag for firearms. Now, you still there, Jack?
I am here. I'm on page 10.
Okay. Then the other thing I thought was interesting, the other stuff that you could buy there, blowguns. Actually, naive as I was, I didn't even know you could buy a blowgun. But you could buy blowguns, holsters, magazines, clips, clothing, pistols, crossbows, hair dryers that look like pistols, or pistol shaped as pistols, guitar case for carrying your assault rifles and machine guns. That's nice, isn't it? Looks like you got a banjo, but you really got, I think the Mafia thought of that years ago. Nazi flags and portraits of General Rommel, something I'd really been looking for, right?
Mm-hmm.
Military vehicles, BB pistols, and toy models of real weapons that really look good. And I think since this time, I don't some states have actually passed laws where you have to color those weapons, don't you, if they look authentic? I'm not sure of that, but I think some of these states they have to make them yellow or put something on them.
Orange, I think.
Some cases where young people have been killed pulling out these weapons. Some of these illegal things and quasi-legal things that they sell at gun shows, we saw a 12-inch blade knife with brass knuckles for a handle. That's a pretty good choice there you have, isn't it? Cut them or sock them, right? Break their jaw?
Yep.
I don't think that's a legal thing. And then the Firearms Act of 1934 outlawed selling of automatic weapons. And since you've probably read this study, you have it in front of you, I was astounded because I saw a video playing, and we walked over, and we saw a video playing that was demonstrating the use of a Hellfire switch. Have you ever heard of those yet?
No, sir.
Okay, the Hellfire switch makes it legal for you to alter a weapon and make it an automatic weapon. Because the way the federal government classifies a semi-automatic weapon is for every pull of the trigger, you get one shot. What the Hellfire switch does is make your finger vibrate, you know, dozens or scores of times per minute, so it actually your firearm actually fires as fast as your finger vibrates on the trigger, which in truth makes it an automatic weapon. So that was kind of interesting to see that. Of course, you can't have a shotgun with a barrel shorter than 18 inches, right? You can remember that as a police officer and a chief of police, correct?
Yes, sir.
But you can, in fact, buy a pistol that fires shotgun shells. Have you ever had the privilege of seeing the Thunder 5?
I'm not sure what the title was, but we had a deputy years ago that carried that, one of those.
Well, they are something to see. They shoot five 410 shotgun shells or 45 caliber rounds. You can put whichever you want in it. So you can actually have a shotgun that's a heavy thing. For me at least, it would be a two-hand weapon. But isn't that interesting that you can do that? I think what this does is sort of illustrate the point that somebody said, who's counted them, that there are more than 20,000 firearms laws in the United States, and we still have death by firearms, although we have, you know, overall in the last couple of 3 years, the lowest homicide rates we've had in like 40 years. And, of course, people do die by firearms. I have some of that data at the beginning of the paper. We did find out cases, too, where people bent the rules there. We had one of our students went and bought 500 rounds of .22 long rifle information, and she was only 18 years of age, and you have to be 21 in Texas to buy that ammunition. They never checked on that. Another student who looked very young actually bought ammunition also, and they never checked for him to see, you know, what his age was. So you have that. Now, there's a lot of extra other stuff that goes on there. There's a political culture to gun shows, and you might be able to guess about it, but in reality, I can't say that you can put a label on this. We saw people from virtually every walk of life, very wealthy people, people that I would say were certainly working class, the hunters, the collectors, very small percentage of women, but those women ran the gamut. They looked like the same ones that you see at a mall going through Macy's store, or some that were dressed in jeans and hunting clothes and things like that. But some of the slogans we saw on bumper stickers and wall stickers and flags that were for sale was buy a gun and piss off the Clintons. China has gun control. Here's another Clinton one. Clinton sucks and Gore, well, an armed society is a polite society. Politicians love unarmed peasants. Is your church ATF approved? Ted Kennedy's car has killed more people than my gun. Personal protection, 24-hour protection dial, 9mm. I'll give you my gun when hell freezes over. Take a bite out of crime. Shoot the bastard. When the going gets tough, I get a machine gun. Then I mentioned in the beginning of the show, I'd never seen one of these before, but I was just getting ready to start this gun show study, and perhaps 2 weeks before I was driving around, and I saw this woman in this little Ford, I think Ford Focus cars or whatever that little Ford was, in the 1990s, and on the back of it was "Happiness is a warm machine gun." I thought that was funny. The customers, I won't go over in detail, but those, since I sort of generalized, but they come from all different categories of people. And the unique experience in all this was the one in Oklahoma City. And if you've never been to Oklahoma or spent much time there, you probably need to know that they're probably the kindest people in America. I mean, that's not an exaggeration. If you have a flat tire on the freeway in Oklahoma, don't worry about someone stopping you, because 15 people are stopping to help you, because 15 people probably will. This is the place where all the little shops and shopping malls and strip malls will carry your packages out to the car for you. They will do the same thing at the gun show in Oklahoma, if you can believe that. When we went to the gun show in Oklahoma, most of the people I would put in the categories of hunters, and some of them dressed like this, but this was a big gun show at a state fairground, and there was not one piece of security equipment or security wires on any of these weapons were displayed, and we were astounded by that. So I asked a couple of the display people about this, and they said, well, probably Oklahoma people would be offended by that if you would think that they were going to steal something, and they might not might not shop at the gun show. But I thought that was interesting. Oklahoma's
just
don't get me started on
that videos, Keith.
Pardon?
Just think how they would think about videos.
Yes. Oh my gosh. Yeah, that's interesting. But anyway, the security people were good. The tightest security we ever saw was at the Dallas Convention Center, and the Dallas police ran that. And you had to go through metal detectors and things like that. But a lot of these others weren't exactly like that. But for anyone that's never been to one of these shows, we talk about here in the end of the study about, you know, what does all this mean and what kind of regulation should transpire relative to a gun show. I'm not sure anything else needs to be done. I mean, illegal weapons are coming into the United States, by the minute probably, and these are legitimate people. And if you make all these restrictions and you reduce the sale of legitimate firearms so severely, then all you're going to do is have an enormous black market in firearms, just like you do in narcotics or other things. So I realize the harm that can come from that. David Koresh and the Branch Davidians, apparently he got a lot or most of his guns from gun shows, but that's not to say that 100 times more decent people got guns there and used them for sporting or target shooting or hunting or something on that order. So I don't know that we need any more gun laws in the United States. If you could pick one, Jack, what would it be?
I'm sorry?
If you could make one piece of legislation relative to guns or firearms, what would you pick?
I'd go back to the old days. As far as I'm concerned, a person wants a weapon and they're legitimate, have it, because you and I both know, like you say, guns come in almost every minute of the day, night, and the people that are buying those are not people who we really want to buy them, and I think everybody has a right to protect themselves on the street or in their house. Hell, a way for an ex-police chief to think, right?
Yeah, right. It's, I got a little section there at the end of the study where we talked about peacemaking. And I don't want that to be misinterpreted. We talk about, I looked at the 1950s. In fact, I had a student do an interesting study of that. They looked at television shows in the 1950s and the values that were represented versus television shows in the first years of the new century, and looked at what was represented and what a difference the world in a little more than 50 years. But if you look at the popular musical West Side Story that talks about gang rivalry, right? In that whole show, not one time does a gun appear in anybody's hands. They beat each other with fists and that type of thing. And certainly a little different than, what's represented in something like the gangster rap cop killer. So, my conclusion about all this is what kind of society have we created for ourselves which allows so many young people to acquire values and form attitudes, which legitimate killing another person, for example, for calling them a name or frowning at them. And that's what this New York police spokesman was saying, this Paul Brown, that these, you know, you look cross-eyed at one of these people and they go murder you. I mean, that's incredible. So I say that when families and schools and churches and this vast entertainment industry, with all its influence, come together and reestablish the sanctity of human life and respect for one's fellow man, we're likely to begin seeing significant reductions in violence in American society. But right now, the family, the church, schools, they're certainly not on the same page, and some of them aren't on any page at all in terms of passing on values from one generation to the other. I used to say the biggest mission of successful society is to produce great fathers. Usually mothers, we don't have to worry. Not always, but we don't. But if we could produce great fathers, and now we have so many that, are over the place. In fact, I was just reading yesterday. I was astounded at the number of illegitimate births among the Mexican illegals coming into the United States. Because a lot of people say, well, these are Catholics. You know, they have high moral values. It's incredible. They have the highest illegitimate birth rate of anyone in the United States. It's not even close. So that's something to think about. You're bringing all these kids in the United States, and or these young people, they're having kids, and often their mothers, it said, didn't have husbands either. So you've got more people being raised by who knows who's raising them, and I think that only spells trouble in the future. So it's an interesting business, and I would say to anyone who's listening tonight that hasn't been to a gun show, that would certainly be an interesting experience for you to see just one. And the Hera Arena in Dayton, does Cincinnati still have them in the town?
What?
Gun shows at the convention center?
I have not seen them. We've got a lot of knife shows there, but I haven't really seen any gun shows.
I don't think they do either, because I've looked. I think there's one in one of the suburbs, Sharonville. Yeah, that's Sharonville. There's a convention center there or something.
Right.
They have gun shows, but I'll bet Cincinnati's legislated it out or just isn't going to host any anymore.
Nobody else obeys the law in Cincinnati, Keith.
Pardon?
Nobody else obeys the law in Cincinnati.
Well, that's, yeah, you got something there. I was going to, one of the things I was going to play tonight, that audio, I was going to use it last week, was this Ohio Coalition Against Gun Violence.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, this ad on the internet, it's an audio that plays, and it has gunfire, and then it says, carrying concealed weapons in Ohio? Bad idea. And my question was going to be, who's that ad for? It can't be for the good citizens, can it?
Yeah.
That's an advertisement to try to influence these gangsters to give up their weapons. I doubt it, right?
Well, I say the legislators in Ohio pretty much lobby for the right for people to carry guns. I mean, they've loosened up on their previous law with reference to carrying. You can carry it on your person at the present time in a car.
Well, March 15th is when the new law goes into effect, and again, that was the first time that a governor's veto was overridden since the 1970s. So, and it was overridden strongly, I think. So that will at least change the concealed carry. Right? I've already talked to people that said they had thought about getting a concealed carry license, and they're all decent people with fathers with families and that type of thing, and they said, but they just think it's too complicated and there are too many restrictions that what value would it be in the end? And of course you never know what value it will be in the end, do you? You probably know people that have been assaulted and either seriously maimed or killed yourself, and as I start out that gun book, I know two that were, and I always think of my daughter's girlfriend from Forest Park in Cincinnati when they were going to high school. Her brother was killed in Houston right in front of his family, and all he did was get off the freeway to put air in his tires. What a mistake that was, right?
Right.
But in Houston isn't the worst place in the world anymore, but I'm not sure I'd want to live in some parts of it. lot of money there. Well, Jack, I think we've run the whole expanse of the show, and again, I apologize for those of you listening. I had some good audio for you tonight, spent a lot of time putting these things together, and it just won't work over the phone. When I play that introductory, were you on right away, Jack?
No, I wasn't.
Okay. You didn't hear the Johnny Cash or Audrey introduce the show?
No.
Okay. If you'd heard that before, could you hear her? Because I can hear on the retake or on the tape or the recording, the archived. Were you able to hear her tonight?
I did not, sir.
Okay. Yeah, so I'll talk to Blog Talk Radio again. It's a great idea. They said pretty soon, in a couple, 3 weeks, they're actually going to put it on the switchboard where I actually click on, when I click on your mic, there'll be a button there for these audios that I've uploaded. But there is certainly no place for it tonight. They said there was going to be, and it's not there. But the sound's coming through okay for you on the speakerphone, though, right?
Yes.
Oh, good. I'm surprised. I don't use a speakerphone much. So, well, look, Jack. Well, thanks for calling in, faithful listener to our show.
I also appreciate you sending me that note on the shelves.
Hey, good. Leave it to us to make them hard to find, right?
All right.
Isn't it an adventure? Should we say the J word? Maybe not. Take care.
You also.
All right, good night.
See you in a couple Saturdays.
Okay.
Okay, Chief.
Again.